To win his $1 billion, or at least something close to it, Steven Snyder would have to persuade the jury that the Jacksonville gasoline leak was more than just an accident. He would have to show that ExxonMobil had acted maliciously, fraudulently, or with gross negligence, a standard that might amount to a finding of willful blindness. He had to show that greed and corporate cover-ups lay behind the Jacksonville leak, and therefore ExxonMobil should be punished or deterred with an award of heavy punitive damages beyond the actual losses of the homeowners, in order to send a signal to the corporation's executives and to other companies in the oil industry. Snyder figured that if he won about $150 million in actual damages, and if the jury was outraged enough by Exxon's actions, he might win a multiplier for punitive damages that could push the total verdict toward $1 billion. If he did that well, he hoped to withstand appellate scrutiny, or at least force Exxon into a high settlement. Snyder subpoenaed hundreds of thousands of pages of documents and emails from ExxonMobil's retail gasoline and safety divisions. As he and his partners painstakingly read through them before trial, they found what they felt was a winnable fraud case that could produce a billion-dollar jury verdict. Snyder decided to turn the trial into a story about the alarm bell that hadn't rung at the Jacksonville station after the gasoline leak began to flow on January 12th. The story involved a leak detector system called the EECO 3000. It was one of two different electronic alarm systems the corporation used at its stations nationwide. And of the two systems ExxonMobil employed to comply with federal regulations, it was the more problematic. Internal documents showed that the EECO 3000 was highly sensitive and prone to false alarms. ExxonMobil had decided to replace the EECO 3000 before the Jacksonville leak occurred, but it had not moved quickly to do so. Exxon said the devices were safe, just harder than they should be to operate, and therefore the pace of replacement was just a routine business matter. The company that originally manufactured the system had been sold. In 2004, the successor company informed ExxonMobil that it would no longer support the leak detector with spare parts. Budgetary constraints and corporate planning timelines meant the EECO 3000 changeover was proceeding gradually. Snyder concluded that the totality of evidence added up to fraud. His argument was that to enhance its gargantuan profits, ExxonMobil had avoided coming to terms with the EECO 3000's fatal flaws. It had failed to act promptly to replace the system at stations near homes that relied upon groundwater wells, and the corporation had sought to hide evidence of the system's troubles. It was perhaps not as obvious a jury-ready story of corporate neglect and greed as the case of the Exxon Valdez captain with a documented alcohol problem, but given the deep unpopularity of oil corporations, and of ExxonMobil in particular, it might be good enough to bring home a fraud verdict from a Baltimore County jury. "It was a lemon," Snyder said of the EECO 3000. "They knew it. It is a dark secret. It was the skeleton in Exxon's closet." On an autumn morning, Snyder and dozens of his clients filed into Courtroom 2 on the third floor of the Baltimore County Courthouse, a massive, prison-like concrete box in suburban Towson, Maryland. Judge Morris W. Baldwin, Jr., a senior visiting judge assigned to the case from nearby Harford County, entered the courtroom and settled on his raised bench. On the wall to his left hung oil portraits of robed judges. Wood paneling, plush carpeting, and upholstered blue vinyl chairs contributed to a heavy, sleep-inducing aesthetic. They all might as well get comfortable. Steven Snyder intended to speak at length about the cause he had now shouldered. "Members of the jury, this is a gas leak that should not have happened," Snyder declared in his opening statement, pacing before the jury box. "It is a leak that took place because Exxon made a corporate decision to disregard the health and the welfare of the citizens. This is a company that decided that profits are much more important than safety." Snyder warned the jurors that the trial would take months, and he urged them to pay close attention to the details. "It is not a contest between the lawyers. Who wears the flashiest suit or jewelry? I will win that contest." "Stipulate," came the deadpan response from the ExxonMobil defense table. There sat James F. Sanders, a trial lawyer from Nashville, Tennessee. Sanders had participated in ExxonMobil's trial defense in the Valdez case more than a decade earlier. He was one of the trial attorneys ExxonMobil relied on in its most risky, sensitive jury cases. Sanders had tested over years the best ways to reach jurors who might be naturally skeptical about the motives of a giant oil corporation. Among other things, as the Jacksonville Exxon trial unfolded, Sanders would avoid badgering witnesses or arguing vehemently with Stephen Snyder, no matter how provocative or outrageous Snyder's behavior or accusations became. To build an emotional connection with jurors on behalf of an unpopular corporation, Sanders believed he had to come across as entirely reasonable, calm, humble, and interested only in a modicum of fairness on behalf of his client. His southern accent and soft voice reinforced his demeanor. Let Snyder bluster and thunder. Sanders would slip in behind him and speak calmly of common sense. ExxonMobil's alleged greed lay at the heart of Snyder's accusations, but he had to calibrate his charge. No one is saying in this case that Exxon intentionally allowed 26,000 gallons to go into the ground, he explained to the jury. Exxon did knowingly allow unreliable and defective equipment that they knew was a lemon. They knew for 7 years, and they did nothing about it, because they didn't care about residents and the environment. All they cared about was profits.